This episode of the Productivityist Podcast is brought to you by Sanebox. Clean up your inbox now with Sanebox. Sanebox learns what email is important to you and filters out what isn't. I use it every single day and I'm not alone. It's going to save you from endless interruptions, so give Sanebox a try now. Listen to this episode and you'll get a special code on how you can get a credit for your new Sanebox account. Now let's get on with the show. Sometimes all you really want to do is sit back and make things grow. Once you've watered it, you want to walk away and let things happen. You want to automate and you want to grow. And that's exactly what our guest on today's show did. Automating, Growing, and Selling is the name of the show because Joshua Latimer has done just that. Joshua left his job as a bank for JP Morgan Chase to start a cleaning business in Michigan, which he eventually grew and sold to a California-based cleaning conglomerate in 2015, and now he's living in Costa Rica, nice, with his four kids and wife, where he helps small business owners from all over the world understand the power of business systems and automation and the freedom that they can bring. He's going to dive into that today. He's also going to talk about largely his business, Send Jim. He is a founder of that company, and it's basically a follow-up automation tool for busy professionals. So we dive into that. We dive into, you know, the idea of boundaries. We dive into the idea of his sprints, how he plans things, how he makes this happen, how he puts the automation and growth into play and makes it work for him, and then how he shows others how to do it, because he's been successful. And if you're going to do anything with successful people, is you want to model after them. So let's dive into this now. Here is my conversation with Joshua Latimer here on the Productivityist Podcast. I want to talk to you about the growth of a new company. Joshua, you and I want to talk a little bit about Send Jim today, and you know, just productivity in general. But I want to talk about, like, as you're building something, as you're building this. How long has Send Jim been around first? And then we're going to dive in a little bit about you and stuff. But I want to hit the ground running. So how long has Send Jim been kind of not just around, but how long has it been, like, in your brain percolating, and now is finally out for the world to see?
I'd say that the total life cycle of this thing at this point is about 4 years, from, you know, ideas and drawings and napkins to what it is now, which is, you know, a monetized functioning product and with real customers all over the place. It's been an interesting road, but we're at about the 4 year mark.
Okay. And what, for those, and everyone now is saying, okay, but what is Send Jim? Is it just some guy that you send somewhere? And then he just, like, is there just one Jim? What is this all about? I know what it is, but let's dive into and get into that. And then we're going to talk a little bit about you and kind of your journey along the way as you've gotten into building this company.
Sure thing. Yeah. Well, what it is, it's a software product. It's an app. And originally it was built for our own self in a previous company I had before I sold it. It's one of those classic stories of, I built an app to scratch my own itch. And then it kind of evolved into its own thing. And what it does is it sends postcards, letters, greeting cards, gift cards, cookies, brownies, caramels, little small gifts to people's customers. So maybe you're a plumber or you're a realtor or whatever, really anyone can use it. You can use your cell phone to send a sequence, a drip campaign of physical things to your customer spread out over the course of like a whole year. And you do that by pushing one button after you set up your sequence. It's just kind of a fun, loving thing. And it's a relationship marketing tool. That's what it is.
So let's talk about the itch that you've scratched with this, right? Why was it an itch for you? Like, I mean, I see it immediately, the value. I mean, I was actually funny. I was talking to another client just recently, and it's something that, you know, with me being a productivityist coaching, I run that. This is something that would work well for me too, because, I mean, even though it's a digital service, or it's done digitally, it's virtually done, this is still a great way to kind of do some outreach. So what led you to say, you know what, this is something that I want to build, and then I want to not only build it, but now that it's growing, I want to make sure that I make it, you know, it's going to be the thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. And what happened for me was, I had a home service company in Michigan. I mean, I got married young, Mike. I started with nothing, had a trailer park. You know, me and my wife lived in a trailer park, you know, young, naive people. And I eventually started this cleaning company, which is a weird business. Now, the company, you know, scaled and was doing you know, close to $200,000 a month by the time I sold it. But the first couple of years were straight up pain and suffering. I mean, honestly, we struggled big time. We could barely buy groceries sometimes. There's a lot of stress, a lot of friction. And around year three is when I had several light bulbs go off when I was exposed to some different ways of looking at business. One of them was the classic E-Myth scenario of working on your business instead of in your business, yep. which really opened up my brain to the idea of systems. And I've known for a while the importance of relationship marketing and customer retention, especially if you have any type of business that repeats your service with your clients over and over. You know, retention is a really, really, really critical thing, and it's a huge blind spot for a lot of companies. So let's say that you get 20 new customers a month, but you have no retention plan. You're not loving on your current customers, your book of business. You're not engaging them, following up with them. What happens is you might be losing 20 on the back end for every 20 that you're getting, and that's how a lot of businesses go flat and they get stuck. And so scratching my own itch was building a system, a very simple way to stay connected with our clients. Because when our company was at scale and we were doing 40, 50, 80, 100 jobs a week, it was getting out of control doing handwritten thank you cards and appointment reminders. I had a little army of high school kids like writing out cards for all these people. And because I understood the importance of relationship marketing, which is why we had so much success and had so many referrals. So I built this tool to replace the army of high school kids, essentially, in the beginning. And it's evolved from there, but in a nutshell, that's what it is.
And you know, we had Michael Gerber on the show, you know, talking about his Beyond the E-Myth, which I thought was, you know, I mean, again, that's an area where I'm in as well, where I need to scale. There's only so much of me to go around, just like in the same instance with you, there's only so much of you to go around and your team. Why is, you call it relationship marketing, which I find, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, you know, when you hear a term like that, like, I mean, to me, it's about, you know, fostering relationships and stuff like that. But some people kind of get creeped out when they hear terms like that. Like, it sounds like, okay, they're like, with this, with what you've built here and what you want to do, there's a real authenticity driven behind it. Like, why is it so key to have those, like, those physical things, you know, given to people in today's day and age, especially?
Well, I think you're making a really good point. And first of all, none of the stuff that I'm going to talk about here today will even work at all if you are not a man or woman of integrity, if you don't genuinely care about your customers and your employees. If you have real relationships in real life with people, then yeah, you should have a relationship marketing strategy, because this isn't about manipulation. It's not about tricking someone to hire you more. It's about genuine, straight up nurturing of valuable relationships in total authenticity. That's what it is. And most entrepreneurs, they love their customers. Like, they're appreciative. They're grateful. I mean, it's a big deal to have customers. Sometimes we forget it. But if I were to ask 10 entrepreneurs, hey, do you value your customers? All of them are going to say, well, heck yes, I value my customers. The problem, however, is that they're not intentional. That's one of my favorite words ever. Mm-hmm. They're not intentional about having any sort of system, framework, methodology. Regardless if you use SendJim, you need to have something in place to stay top of mind with people, to invest in the relationship, to check in with people, to serve them, to love on them. Look, when you do that and it's real and authentic, you just make more money. It's a byproduct of it. You're going to get more referrals, more repeat business. You're going to come back at a higher ticket. That's the way that business works. All business is built on relationships with people that you know, like, and trust. So it's critical to have something in place. But the problem is that it's a lot of work. Like, it's logistically, it's very confusing if you have a service company or you have customers coming and going all the time to have something consistent that you can rely on. And that's what this software does for you, is it makes it very, very simple. It reduces that process down to a button. But irregardless, I think it's about intentionality, not manipulation, and you need to be doing something. Most people are doing nothing.
Well, one of the things that you touched on was intention, and that's a big word for me too, because I believe productivity is about intention plus attention. And what SendJim does, from what I can see, I've not used it yet. I'll be forthright and upfront about that, although it definitely is compelling to me, especially considering the kind of work that we're doing here at Productivityist. What I like is that it gives you the ability to pay attention to those intentions. Let's talk about systemization in general. How have you systemized, not just, you know, obviously what you're doing in business, but do you take that and carry it over into other aspects of your life, like the idea of systemizing?
Yeah, that's a great question, because some people think this is crazy what I'm about to tell you, but I systemize the relationships with my wife and kids.
No, I get it.
I'm not a robot. I'm one of the funnest guys to hang out with ever, right? But I'm also very busy, very driven. I have a lot of things going on, like you and everybody listening to this probably. So I have to put barriers in my schedule. That's what being intentional is. It's a system. It's a mechanism. It's a methodology for me to be present with my kids every week. I have Sawyer Sunday with my youngest son. I have Maverick Monday with my oldest son. I have Tucker Tuesday with my middle son. I have a baby girl named Finley, and she's only one, but she gets Finley Friday, right? Date night is on Saturday at 5 p.m. It's the way it is. I don't violate those things. And if you don't have intentionality in saying, all right, you know, I'm going to put these immovable, you know, buckets in my week, these spots to fill up, you know, time with my kids or with my wife, then I'm not going to do it. And all the intention of wanting to be a better husband in the world isn't the same as actually executing and making sure that you're there and there's consistency. It's highly valuable. And it's not about being robotic, like I said. It's just about being organized with your life. I think that's the exact answer you're looking for.
And you know what it is? Here's what's interesting. Okay, so we're gonna go not in a different direction, but we're gonna dive into that a bit deeper because you talk about those days and how you've blocked those off. Again, we haven't really had a chance to talk before this. In fact, you know, as we were getting on the show, and you know what, to be completely upfront, you know, there's a lot of times where you're interviewing and talking with people about podcasts and you get to know them just during the course of an episode of an interview. And you talked about the idea of basically allocating days for your children and for different aspects of your life. We here at Productivityist, and the methodology I've come up with is called the Now Year Method, where we theme our days. It's one of the critical components of it. So every day gets an overarching focus. And what's funny is that when I talk to people about this, and you're now one of them, is that a lot of people don't recognize that they're already kind of doing aspects of that method when they're theming their time. Like you, like Finley Fridays and all these other days. I mean, you've themed that time so that they get your overarching focus. Have you, the days that you didn't mention where your kids, I mean, if you have seven kids, then you're going to have to name them after every day of the week, right? You're going to have that alliteration going on. But those days that aren't themed, you know, like with your kids, do you have overarching focuses on those days of the week as well? Or do you kind of schedule yourself in a bit of a different fashion on those days?
Well, I don't have other aspects that are that solid because I'm involved in many projects and my schedule is relatively elastic. You know, I have a podcast, I have a digital product, I have some private Facebook groups that we run. I have my software business. I do speaking. I do a bunch of different stuff. And so sometimes, you know, there's ebbs and flows to the way that my schedule works, right? Sometimes it can be a total mess, but, you know, my focus is on progress, not perfection. I believe all these things have to be elastic to some degree or else you're just going to abandon it and feel hopeless, right? So the other days of my week, yeah, what I do is I do week-long sprints. I use a variety of methods. I have, you know, task management tools I use. I have a little productivity planner, which is a great little resource that helps you just, you know, line up the most important things for that day and then check them off the list and kind of keep you focused.
Which planner do you use?
It's called the Productivity Planner.
It's the one, the 5-minute journal folks.
I think it is. Yep. Yes. And yep. I didn't realize that until recently. I bought this a long time ago. I didn't know anything about the company, but I think it is that company.
Yeah, it is. I think it was initially a Kickstarter. And the guy, they're based out of Toronto, actually. So another Canadian company. As a Canadian, I'm very proud that they've got. Yeah, the Productivity Planner is quite cool. And so do you use digital tools as well to help manage this kind of stuff, or is it generally a paper based planner that you use?
I love writing stuff down. Like as I'm talking to you right now, I have a journal open up with a whole page of notes for one of the accountability groups I'm in. And I'm not perfect at this stuff. Like I'm not. Like it's a struggle. I'm not naturally organized. I have to actually put effort forth to do this. And so it's not always perfect, but I like a good old-fashioned pen and paper, but there's tons of digital tools that my team and I use. I mean, my life is like this mess of Slack and Skype and Trello and Zapier and, you know, autoresponder. We have all these different ways we communicate depending on what project. But for me personally and what I'm going to focus on, I think the simplest way ever is just to make a list each day and try to check off the list.
We're going to take a break from the action right now, and I'm going to dive back into things with Joshua in a second. But first, I want to talk to you about the sponsor of this episode of the Productivityist Podcast, and that sponsor is Sanebox. I've been using Sanebox for a while, and I recently just upped my level of support to the lunch level because I've just really enjoyed what Sanebox has to offer. Sanebox is a way to manage your email through automation and allow you to really get into email where you need to be and get out of it as quickly as you can. Because a lot of email that comes in, you don't really need to be checking, at least not as often as you are. And a lot of the messages that go into your inbox really don't need to be looked at every time you go in there. You know, you don't really want to be spending time in your email inbox that you don't really need to be spending in it. And Sanebox cleans up your inbox. It learns what email is important to you, and then it filters out what isn't. So I see a lot of emails come in to my inbox every single day. And what happens is through time, is Sanebox has learned which emails are important to me and which ones aren't. So when I look at my Sane Later folder, those are all the emails that kind of filter into the background. And the ones that remain in my inbox are the ones that I really, really should take a look at. And then you can create some other folders as well. For example, I'm about to prepare for a trip overseas, and there's a Sane Vacation filter that allows me to put things into the so that I don't see them until after I'm done my vacation. So there's that. There's so many cool little filters that Sanebox has to offer. In fact, if I check them out right now, I've used my 3-mail workflow before, which you've probably heard me talk about. If you're a Patreon supporter, you've definitely heard me talk about in bonus episodes. But some of the cool things that allows me to do is it allows me to move email into a folder called Sane Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, whatever. And what happens is I get emails snoozed until 10 a.m. on that specific day. And what happens is instead of me having to go into that folder, which is what I used to do before I used Sanebox, is it pushes it back into my primary inbox. There's also a really cool feature called Sane Black Hole. So when you unsubscribe from spam, sometimes what happens is it puts you on a list. Like there's that unsubscribe actually can do that. It's not the most ethical way of making things happen, but it does happen. Sane Black Hole allows you to drag unwanted subscription or unwanted mail in there and it goes away. Future ones will go straight to the trash. There's Sane News, which is for all your newsletter and email lists, but there's a few others. Again, you can Sane Vacations, one I'm using, where I can snooze my emails until vacation's over. Say not spam, anything that's in your spam folder, you can rescue from it. And then there's Say no replies. Anything that you've sent and haven't received a reply, those emails are marked as unread. And the three default folders you get are Sane Later, which I mentioned earlier, Sane Archive, which are your oldest emails, and things automatically get moved there, and Sane No Replies. Now, I'm using the lunch version of this account, but there's the snack version, there's a few others, and you're going to get a $25 credit when you go to this URL, sanebox.com/Vardy, V-A-R-D-Y. It'll be linked in the show notes as well. But you check that out, you're going to get a $25 credit to apply to a Sanebox account, a new one. So you can check that out. I've been using Sanebox for a while. I've only in the past couple of months really dove deep into some of the advanced features. By implementing my 3-mail workflow in it, I've saved a ton of time. And I'm not spending as much time in email as I was before. I was already pretty limited. Now I'm whizzing through email like nobody's business. So I highly encourage you to check out Sanebox. Again, go to sanebox.com/Vardy and you'll learn all about what Sanebox has to offer. Now let's get back to the show. What fascinates you just in general? Like, I mean, you know, talking about business life, like, I mean, the element of delight and fascination doesn't in a busy world when you're moving so quickly and yet deliberately, you're driven, right? We talked about that. What are the kind of things that fascinate and delight you?
Oh man, I am a very curious person, as you probably are too. I think because I lived in Costa Rica for over the last year, one of the things that fascinates me the most right now are the cultural self-limiting beliefs based on different parts of the world, like economically with business, the way that entrepreneurship is viewed. I just kind of thought it was black and white and this is reality and, you know, anybody can do anything. Of course you can start a business and succeed. You just do this and this and it might be hard, but you keep going. And I've just learned that that's not true and that people have all kinds of weird views. So I think economic and business paradigms on a mental level, like the lens that we look at entrepreneurship through, I've learned is very different depending on where you are in the world.
What kind of stuff do you do in terms of reading? Do you spend a lot of time just reading blog posts, or you're reading books? Anything that's kind of stuck out, you know, over the past few months that you've read? They're kind of like, you know, this is going to be either a bit of a game changer for me, or it's going to, I could see this, you know, kind of resonating in the back of my mind for years to come.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Yeah. I consume a lot of podcasts. I love podcasts, and I do read books too. I have a book sitting right here in my office called The One Thing by Gary Keller. Yep. It's about focus. I mean, the first page of the book, you open it and it says there's this Russian proverb, which I thought was hilarious. I didn't know there was Russian proverbs anyway. And it said, if you chase two rabbits, you'll catch neither one. Right. That was cool. That just to give you an idea of that book. But I heard an interview with a guy named Greg McKeown, and he's an author of the book Essentialism. And the subtitle of that book blew my mind in a good way. It's like, it's amazing. And the subtitle is The Disciplined Pursuit of Less. That blew my mind. And probably because I'm at a stage in my career, my life, where I'm really going 100 miles an hour, you know, redlining at times with, you know, what my mental bandwidth can take and all of the things coming at you. And really starting to realize that to level up in business, you have to become more disciplined in saying no to stuff. And you can't have everything all at the same time. You just can't. You can't. And it's kind of a rude awakening in a way, but it's also really refreshing. It's an amazing concept. Everybody loves that book. Obviously, you've heard of it as well, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. It's fantastic. What steps are you taking to become more essentialist?
One of the big ones is accountability. Accountability. So a lot of entrepreneurs I work with a lot of like brick and mortar, hometown, like family businesses. And these people start businesses because they don't want a boss, right? Like it's like when you're 18 years old, you're rebellious. You want nothing more than to be the master of your own destiny. And so you start a business, maybe you have a lawn care company, but now it's 10 years later and you're doing $500,000 in revenue and you kind of got something. But what happens is sometimes people never figure out that the highest achievers in the world crave accountability. Because for me, we talk about execution, making a list. Nobody's going to actually do this stuff consistently if there's not some level of accountability in your life, unless you're just a superhero rock star. But most of us aren't like that. So you have to be sharing your goals and your sprints and your vision with other people that are like-minded, that'll support you in it. And you have to be accountable to doing what you say you're going to do. It's a huge thing. You know, it's like a gym membership. You know, if you go work out with a buddy every day, you're going to go because you don't want to leave him there by himself and look like an idiot and not show up. You can use the same stuff in business, and it's very powerful.
What's to keep going along that track, what's one thing that you said no to that took recently or even if you have gotten to this point yet that you really struggled with turning down or turning aside?
Maybe. Oh, yeah. I'm going to get in trouble with this one, but I got offered to co-author a book with a very, very famous business author. It was going to be a huge financial and time commitment to pull it together and to make it happen. And after long deliberation, I decided not to. And it was an extremely hard decision, but I really knew at the time that it just wasn't a good fit for what I was trying to make happen this year in my life. And, you know, it was a painful thing. You know, I think saying no to things, there's pain involved, especially at least at first, at least when you first start doing it, you know, in my case. My sister works for a billionaire. She's an executive assistant. She doesn't have a business or anything, but she's a really sharp girl. And, you know, this guy's schedule is down to 15-minute increments for the entire day. He has three executive assistants. And, you know, he says no to like 673 things per hour, right? Like through him and his team, because he has to, because to be worth $5 billion, he can only, you know, spend his mental bandwidth on those high level relationships and activities. And me being way down the chain from that, I have to do the same thing in a smaller way to begin that process.
What boundaries have you put in place to kind of help you with that process? Because I know for me, one of the things that I'm a people pleaser, so I like to be able to, and actually it's funny, a book deal, we're talking a couple months ago now, a few months back, where I was going to be having a book deal and I turned it aside. After already agreeing to do it, I actually backed out, which is even more painful because now you've said yes, and then you know your integrity and your you've got to build that trust back up, which I mean, so I'm, you know, one of the things that anyone listening here, like, take that time. You took the time to sit back and say, no, I basically jumped at it without properly assessing it, which you'd think as a productivity guy, I wouldn't have done. But, you know, again, ego kind of got in the way. Let's talk about some of the boundaries that you've set up so that you can make it easier to say no. Like, one of the things I've done is if people want to book a time with me, and you actually came across this when you were booking the episode, we don't do an email dance back and forth to book an episode. There's a link and you click on the link and there's only one specific day at this. Actually, when you booked, there were 3 days that were possible. Now that I've batched it and gotten ahead far enough, there is only one day of the week where anyone can book to be on the podcast. And I mean, and that's just something I've set up because I need to have that ability to focus on certain activities on certain days. Do you have anything in place that kind of allows you to have the boundaries be set so that you sometimes don't even need to think about that, so that emotion doesn't come into play, which is often what can cause you to say yes when you should be saying no?
Yeah, I think it's important to break your day into sprints, right? So a couple of things I do is I'm trying to do a much better job and be more aggressive at delegating things. The less lower level activities I have to deal with, the less distraction, that's a huge boundary for me, because the more I have my email open, the more I'm just doing busy work, so to speak, the less productive I'm being. There are certain things in my company that I can only do, the certain relationships, the strategies, certain things. I need to spend most of my time there. So that's one, is delegating and giving people around you permission to not be perfect, but take over responsibilities in your life so that you can, you know, begin to level up, not to repeat myself 400 times, but that's really how I see it, is leveling up, you know, as a business person, as an entrepreneur. The other boundary is I shut everything off. So if I need to focus on something, I just turn it off. You know, I have super powerful shiny object syndrome. if I see the Facebook, you know, notification come, or I get a message or an email, it's like irresistible. It's completely captivating. I have to look at it. So if there's something I need to do in my schedule, I literally just turn it off. I shut it off. I'll turn the internet off on my computer and write a blog post or write something for a magazine I'm going to put in or whatever. Because for me, it's the only way I'm going to be able to knock it out, in, you know, in a short period of time.
Let's get into Send Jim a little bit more before we wrap up. So, you know, who's the ideal person, you know, in your mind to kind of give Send Jim a go? And then finally, why Jim? So let's unpack that first.
I totally should have called this Send Josh, right? Because I'm like the face of the company. I do videos, right. I do interviews. But I should have done it. But the logic behind it at the time, and now we're just kind of rolling with it, is you don't have time to follow up with all of your customers, but Jim does, so send Jim. And he's kind of like the quintessential everyman, you know, just that nameless guy who can go get the job done for you, follow up, do the appointment reminders, do the relationship marketing. We're trying to personify the software a little bit. That was why we did it. So I should have called it Send Josh, though. But our ideal customer for it is really, this is going to sound really bad, and this is one of my problems as an entrepreneur, is it's our product is for anybody that has a customer that they need to stay engaged with. And that's great and horrible all at the same time, because it's too broad. It's like, it's so applicable. It's hard with our marketing efforts to really have it hit home for different vertical markets and different niches. And, you know, we're working through that, you know, but we're kind of going one vertical at a time. We have a lot of realtors using it. Insurance agents use it. Any kind of home service, anybody that has a repeat service where you need to remind people to come back. Like, we have oil change places using our product, because one of the cool features about it is you can take a picture and send a postcard, and on the postcard, is on the front of the card, is that picture. So for example, you get your oil change, the technician just snaps a picture, hits send, and it will send you a card with your own car on the front of the card saying, hey, bring in your Nissan to get your oil change. It's been 3 months. Stuff like that. So it's a very flexible product. It's applicable to a lot of different industries. So that's a harder question to answer, is who the perfect avatar is.
So we now know that it should have been called Send Josh, kind of like Productivist. When I think about that name now, You know, I mean, it was coined during a podcast episode, and then everyone started talking about it. And now it's one of the biggest things where I run into where it's like, how do you spell that again? Productivity. Is, I don't understand. How does that work?
Yes.
Josh, where can so people want to give Send Jim a try? Where do they go? And where can they find you online so that they can kind of dive in and you know, maybe not interrupt you and know which days of the week that they can, but also just to learn more about you?
Well, you can go to my website, automatejosh.com, and it has kind of links to all my stuff and all that. If you want to try Send Jim, for, you know, because you think maybe it could work for you, just go to the App Store on your cell phone and search for Send Jim, you know, J-I-M, and you can start a free account, and you can actually send yourself a box of brownies for free along with a greeting card. So you can kind of see, you know, what these things are like and kind of understand the feel totally for free. So just go to the App Store, search for it, create a free account, hit a couple buttons, and it will get you some brownies, fatten you up.
Now, does this work worldwide or just US? US, Canada?
Just the US.
Just
right?
US.
Just the US. Which okay. I have tons of Canadian friends because I'm from Michigan and they're very upset at me about this. We get a lot of requests from Canada, some from Australia, New Zealand, you know, all the other westernized countries, but the Canadians are not happy with me. But we'll
Awesome. Awesome. Well, good to know. Most of my audience is American, so if you're American, then take advantage of that offer. Joshua, thanks so much for joining me today. Big thanks to Joshua Latimer for joining me on the show today. You can look at all the things we discussed, and probably a few more might sneak in there as well over in our show notes for the podcast. Big thanks to Sanebox for sponsoring this week's episode of the show. You can head over to sanebox.com/Vardy to get a $25 credit off of any new account. I highly recommend you give Sanebox a look today. And if you want to get more from Joshua Latimer off of some of the bonus content that we put together, a completely different episode, something that's exclusive to Patreon supporters, then you can become a Patreon supporter. Head over to patreon.com/productivityist and check out all the perks that we have to offer there, including some really cool bonus materials, such as some of the products that we offer, and just some extra community that you can have where you can talk about bonus episodes, talk about productivity within our very own Slack community. So head over to patreon.com/productivityist to learn more about that. And if you can't support the show, that is cool as well. Just go into iTunes or whatever podcast aggregator you're using to listen to the show and give me a rating or review. John Polstra, the podcast producer, and myself look at all the feedback. We want to make the show better, and leaving ratings and reviews definitely helps with that. Thanks to all of you for listening this week. I really, really had a great time, and I thank you for joining me. Until next time, this is Mike Vardy, host of the Productivityist Podcast, reminding you to stop guessing and start going. This episode of the Productivityist Podcast was brought to you by Sanebox, email management for any inbox. I'm a big user, big fan of Sanebox, and now you can give it a try too. Head over to sanebox.com/Vardy to get a $25 credit off of a new account. Let's bring some sanity back to your email. Give Sanebox a go. We'll see you next week.